welcome to What I Did Next from A&T Media. I'm Malak Fouad, your host. In this show, we'll be talking to inspirational guests about those moments in life when you're faced with a crossroads and have to decide which way to go. Do you choose a well-worn, sure route, or do you jump off the deep end and hope it will all work out? Our guests have all confronted this dilemma, and we discuss how this happens and how it changed the course of their lives. Today, I'm joined by Dina Al-Mufti, a powerhouse in the NGO world in the Middle East. In 2003, Dina co-founded Injaz Egypt, which was built in partnership with the Global Junior Achievement Program. This organization helps young adults ready themselves with the necessary skills to join the working world. Injaz have worked with over 300 public schools and 25 universities in Egypt so far. Injaz also supports budding entrepreneurs through its startup incubator, which has supported over 80 businesses since its inception. Dina is a recipient of numerous awards, including the Young Achiever of the Year Award for 2016 by Arabian Business Magazine, as well as a Top 50 Award for Top Performing Women in Egypt for 2016. Like most people, Dina has had pivots in life that have led her down unexpected paths. Her first significant pivot came early in life when she stood her ground about wanting a career in the world of development and impacting communities, much to her father's bewilderment. With a first-class education, including degrees from Tufts and Georgetown in the US, Dina could have opted for a conventional career path in the corporate world. But instead, she chose a path less traveled. As you may have heard on previous episodes, there are a couple of staple questions I've been asking guests in order to delve a bit deeper into their psyche and get a sense of who they are and what inspires them. One of these is a dinner party question. If they could invite any five people to a dinner, who would they choose? Dina's answer was immediate and encapsulates her upbeat and vibrant personality perfectly.
Well, first off, they wouldn't be five, and it wouldn't be quiet. And for, like, hands down, I would pick like J-Lo, Shakira, Enrique to get us like dancing.
I love it.
I'd pick like Tina Fey, Chris Rock, Will Ferrell to get us laughing all night. So it'll be anything but quiet.
That's amazing. Can I come?
You're the guest of honor.
Can I be one of the six? That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Are there any historical figures that you'd be interested in meeting that you...
Historical figures, yeah, of course. Like, there's so many, right? But for a dinner, I'd honestly want it to be fun.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we won't do much talking. So it might be a waste of a guest someone from the historic figures.
Yeah. So you'd go more for the fun element.
I'll go for the fun, partying and dancing.
That sounds good. Would it just be you with the comedians and singers?
Oh, no. I'd like invite everyone I knew, family, friends. Everyone would be invited for a good time.
We're looking at a huge party.
Yes, a huge fun party where we're going to laugh and dance all night.
So no small dinner of things.
None of that.
All right. Well, that's kind of very much sums up your character.
Yeah.
Which is great. I've heard you say your father had wanted you to go into more of a corporate direction and that you kind of took a left turn.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit about that.
I studied like international relations and which everybody studies something and ends up working in something else, right? After I graduated, I really wanted to do something that was in development or had an impact, working with communities, all of that. And my dad just didn't get it. He's like, You had such a great education.
Yeah.
You have such amazing opportunities in the corporate world. And
had you like begun to look at the corporate world? Had you been made offers at all?
Or no,
you
didn't look at them at all? I wasn't interested.
Yeah.
So I was really following my heart on that one. So I really knew that this the kind of at least the direction I wanted to move into. So I didn't even experiment with working in the corporate world. And so it really confused my dad. But regardless, he was very supportive of what it was, the direction that I wanted to take. He always was encouraging and super supportive of any decision I made. And that's when I ventured out and just, you know, interviewed in different nonprofits. And I got an opportunity to work at Save the Children. And then the opportunity presented itself to pilot a program called INJAZ. And my role would be to eventually establish it as an organization in Egypt. That same week, I had found out that I was pregnant with my first daughter, Talia.
That's incredible.
So I had like two big surprises that week.
Absolutely. And they were both equally important in your mind.
Yes, exactly. So can you imagine, like, I'm super excited about, you know, the first time challenges of being
Absolutely.
A mom. And I'm super excited about this big challenge of, you know, piloting this program that would eventually become an organization.
And how old were you at the time?
At the time, I was probably 24.
That's so young, dear.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, to begin a project of that nature, not the baby.
Yes, exactly.
I'm talking about it, Jen.
Yes, yes.
But to begin at 24, a project of that kind, it's very young.
Yeah, and also to be a young
and
mom.
And of course to be a young mom.
Yeah, I think I started these two major challenges at a very young age. And I cannot tell you, like, it was, like, how crazy it was. And can you imagine, like, me, I'm someone in their early 20s at the time, as a young girl going in and trying to get permits and clearances and government licenses and convince bureaucrats that we're establishing this organization, this is our project, and super excited as I talk, and all they can think about is, where's your boss?
Yeah.
Who are you? Bring me someone older to speak to.
But that would have been the case even in a Western country, whereas here it's so patriarchal.
Yes, very, extremely.
And you're facing huge obstacles.
They were shocked. They didn't get it. Like, every time they'd say in Arabic, Hatili mudirik, Hatili had kbira kallemu. You know?
That's so
funny. And every time I tell them, Mafish had the
beard.
There's no one old. It's just me. And they just didn't get it. And it was just about being persistent and just, you know, I don't know whether it was they got fed up of my nagging.
That's hilarious.
You know.
But you know, I think that's
what it was.
That's when you're young.
Yes.
You don't think that anything will stand in your way.
Yeah.
And you don't know any better. So you just go for it.
And you don't overthink
things
at all. It's like you have something in your head. You're on a mission. You're focused on that. And you're not going to stop till you get it. And that really helped in gaining their trust, of the bureaucrats, government officials, all those people that I had to deal with at a very young age. You know, I at the end, maybe they found me a bit amusing, like they didn't quite get me,
but
in the end, it worked out.
It's funny, I wonder with experience whether you would have had the same guts, 20 years later, would you have done all that? You know, when you're so young, you just go for it. I mean, why not? What have I got to lose?
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And how did you juggle the baby and that new job at the beginning?
Yeah. So I was very, very lucky that she was the first grandchild on both sides. So I had a lot of family support.
A lot of help.
A lot of help. Yeah. Like, my mom would come at 8 a.m. to take her.
How sweet.
Yeah. So I could go to the office. And also, my husband is a very hands-on dad. He's a great dad. And so I could not have done it at all in any way, shape, or form without family support.
Yeah. And I think when you're that young, when you're 24, and you have to juggle all these things, you have the energy.
Yeah.
So in any case, it's no problem. You're going to manage it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's just like I had this wave of energy.
Yeah.
Like I felt unstoppable.
It's amazing.
At that young age, and again, you don't have the mental barriers where, no, you can't do this and you can't do that, like almost like you're open to all possibilities.
Absolutely. And how long did you wait for your second child? Did you give yourself some time?
No, can you imagine? She came 1.5 years later.
Oh, wow.
So I was juggling the piloting, the organization and, two small babies. But again, I mentioned the family support system. But what I have to mention is I was very, very fortunate early on that I met my co-founder, Dalia Hlali, who had stepped in first to temp for me when I was on my maternity leave with my first child. And, you know, we hit it off. We had amazing chemistry. We really balanced each other well. We were opposites, in our characters, and that really made a really great combination as a partner. I mean, when anyone's out there looking for a partner, you should look for someone who completes you and has the opposite strengths to balance your weaknesses.
Yeah, complements you. Juggling the family and juggling the job, when you're young, you kind of just, you take it in your stride. But the work-life balance is a huge thing that everyone's talking about. And I think with the pandemic, it's come to a bit of a head, and everyone is prioritizing that balance over a lot of other things now. How do you address that?
Yeah. So you said something very important, which is prioritizing. So all throughout, although I considered like in Jazz or my organization as my other child, as my baby as well, as I was growing a very young family of with my two younger kids, but my priority was always them. And so I would always structure my day. So I would know that, okay, they're going to their nursery like in the morning, and I would never like try and work past 3:30 or 4 o'clock. So that was my rule. And then I would allow a gap of where I'd leave my phone and no distractions between 4 and 8 till they went to bed. And anything that needed to get done after that, it could get done later on in the evening.
And were you the type who would work late into the night? Because that sounds like a very long day otherwise. You know?
Yeah. No. Whenever it was needed, like yeah. Whenever there were calls that I needed to, you know, answer back or whatever, I'd do that later. But I wouldn't consider myself to having been a workaholic. I value balance. I value my time. I value family time. I value the time, you know, to myself. Or to work out or, you know, so this has always been part of the equation.
From the beginning.
Yeah,
from the very beginning.
And now even more so. Yeah. But I mean, from the beginning, that there was always that element.
How do you see, since we're talking about what's like slight changes now with obviously the pandemic and a lot of people are working from home, and do you feel that perhaps the work-life balance can be blurred now, actually, more than it used to be a bit more distinctive because you'd physically go to an office and then you'd come home. Yeah. Now it's kind of like
blending. It's interesting how that's happening, right? And I think it's been a real awakening this year to so many people all around the world, actually, in prioritizing their life, in prioritizing themselves, in prioritizing their health. Because what good is success and financial success and all of that if your life is personal life is in shambles, your health is in shambles? So I think it was a real wake-up call to so many people that the importance of balance.
What I'm noticing with the pandemic is men are getting in on the act, whereas before, the work-life balance was very much a feminine thing. And how do you juggle your family and your job? And now the men are kind of like, well, I want some balance too.
I feel that
seems to be coming out of the pandemic, actually, from what I'm seeing a bit more.
Yeah, it's a realization all throughout.
Absolutely.
I mean, maybe we caught on as women on
earlier.
Twitter earlier. The men are catching up.
Of course.
So it's great to see everyone's
absolutely.
Having that realization.
Absolutely, it's very important. What's really interesting is how you began purely in an educational situation and you saw a gap.
Yes.
And you wanted to meet your students' needs.
Exactly.
And so you pivoted a little bit.
We did.
Right?
We
so
did. We
that
did.
Can
we
be
were
a way of...
We
yeah.
were purely educational because that's... we're following the mandate of our global organization, but we really saw the need here in Egypt of so many, you know, graduates graduating from university, and they've taken our programs and they kept asking us, like, how do we register our company? How? And they had, you know, so many questions, and they asked for so much advice. We sort of got our private sector partners together and said, how would you like to sponsor this kind of an accelerator?
And is Egypt the only country that is offering that accelerator program? Or did you pioneer it?
We did pioneer it. I can honestly say that we were one of the first organizations to really help early stage startups and young entrepreneurs and give them that push to scale and grow their businesses. And some have had phenomenal success, not only locally, but regionally as well.
So I'm just perusing your CV that you sent me. And it's very impressive. You've gotten a lot of awards in most influential under 40 by the Arabian Business Magazine.
Yeah,
a young achiever of the year award, Bardu Arabian Business.
Yes.
And the most fun, which I think must have been the most fun for you, was being a judge on Shark Tank.
Dina Al-Mufti.
2016 is when I was a guest on the show, and it was like the Shark Tank, the Egyptian version. It was called Huna Shabab, and it was hosted by Lamis Al-Hadidi. The second year, which I believe was 2017, I was a part of the full-time investor or judging panel. Myself, Khalid Ismail, Ayman Ismail, and Randa Abdu. And that was a truly remarkable experience. Why? Is because for the past 15 years, we've been personally in our organization promoting entrepreneurship and, you know, trying to change the mindset, because, you know, we're a very risk-averse culture, and encouraging the people we worked with to take on that kind of
experience. It's not common in Egypt to do your own thing at all.
Yeah, because it's not common.
Yeah.
But with this show, like overnight, it became such a, you know, like it became a popular concept to become an entrepreneur, and it became accepted.
Well, it also showed that there were no limits.
Yeah, and no limits. And because we always had this barrier of resistance, and we'd get a lot of these young entrepreneurs, especially the girls, telling us, you know, my parents aren't encouraging me. I feel very discouraged. And it was a lot of this resistance from families to have their sons or daughters, you know, leave a potential career
job,
or a desk job
for
something that could be unknown, into the unknown. And so
absolutely. They
were very discouraging of it. A complete 180 flip.
How did you feel that?
I mean, just seeing the parents of the entrepreneurs who were presenting and talking to the parents and seeing how proud they are of their kids, and they were even saying, I get it now.
Yeah,
I get what
yeah,
they're doing.
That's amazing.
You know, they were completely clueless. Like, what are you getting into, and what is this risk?
And it
venture?
Cuts across all socioeconomic
classes.
It's amazing.
That was just so heartwarming to see that shift happening.
Of course, because it's offering opportunities to people who never would have them otherwise.
Exactly. Yeah. And I always talk about this one example of his name's Mustafa, and he's from a town here in Egypt, in Tanta, and he was in engineering school. And he dropped out to establish his business, which was called Recyclobikia. And his parents were appalled that he took that step. Appalled.
Yeah.
But guess what? Like 2 years later, he was on Forbes magazine as one
incredible.
Of the top. And he became like an instant role model. He was just one example.
I think it's become a lot more accepted.
Yeah.
And I think the revolution of 2011 was kind of the instigator for that. I mean, that seems to me, in my mind, very much a turning point for a lot of these young people who were a bit hopeless before and then thought, you know, I have nothing to lose, so I'll do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that seems to have been very much the case.
Yes, exactly. While we saw in 2011 this whole political revolution take place, led by youth,
but
also there was
an economic revolution for sure,
where, you know, this energy was being channeled into something new.
Do you see a lot of women or young women going off on their own in an entrepreneurial way?
Okay, so because we've been in this for so long, like we've been doing this from 2003, and I have to tell you, when we started our accelerator, 2011, we hardly found a girl on a team. Like maybe there was one girl on one team.
Right.
And so the following year, we're like, okay, we're not accepting any teams unless there's more girls on your team. Mm. And that's when we started like exploring, why aren't there enough girls on the teams? And we'd get these comments from the teams themselves saying, well, the girl's parents isn't allowing her to be part of a team that's all guys, or not allowing her to stay up at night later.
Right.
So those were some of
the barriers.
Some
at
of the barriers and the feedback we were getting of why aren't there enough girls? But what happened was we over time, so 2012, we saw more girls participating, 2013. By 2014 and 2015, we were seeing all girl-led teams.
That's incredible.
And what was more incredible was by the time 2015 rolled around, we found that an all-girl team actually won the top award in our accelerator, and they did a phenomenal job, and they went on to compete at a regional level, and even won an award at a regional level, and that was just super inspiring to see. And once that happened, and you gained that kind of a light was shone, you know,
it's like a light bulb moment.
Yeah, and the media attention on them encouraged other girls to follow suit.
Of course.
And this is what is really amazing is when you highlight these role models, everybody gets super inspired
by
them.
Of course. So you're a bit of a role model in your own right.
Oh, thank you.
It's true. I mean, considering how young you were when you began all this, do you come across in your work a lot of younger women sort of looking up to you? I'm sure you do. thinking, I want to be the next Dina.
Oh, no, that's too much. No, but
it is inspirational.
I'm like so inspired that there is just this generation of young women who are so resilient and driven and unstoppable. It's just so amazing to see, because maybe when I was younger, it was maybe not so common.
We
didn't find a lot of examples that I could look up to. Maybe there were fewer, but certainly there were. But now there are so many more role models to look up to, people who, you know, younger girls can find inspiring. And that's just amazing that we're going to have a very powerful, inspiring generation of young women.
I think
women.
Certainly there were women in more traditional roles that people looked up to before.
Yes,
but
exactly.
Now there are much
it's
more.
It's so different,
absolutely.
And so diverse,
and now
right?
There's no limits.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone can do anything they want.
Anything.
You just have to come up with a fun idea and do it, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And look what we're seeing.
Exactly.
It's all over the internet.
Everywhere. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Let's turn to the other sort of fixture question of my podcast, which is the three elements that have inspired you from a book, from a film, a piece of music or a song that have touched you in some way.
A classic film for me that just reminds me of my childhood, because I watched it so many times growing up, is maybe The Sound of Music.
I love it.
And I love that I got the opportunity to visit Salzburg and visit like all the, you know, all the big sites that were in that movie. That brings back a lot of like nostalgia for me, and, you know, just memories of my childhood. So
did you show it to your children when they were growing
yes,
up?
Yes. They know all the songs by
heart.
Oh,
yeah. It's a great film.
It is. So I just loved that one growing up, and with all the music and the songs. Of course, so many of us grew up watching it. In terms of the book, I would maybe think of like Power of the Now, just because like it's one of the books that first really inspired me when I was in college. In that whole personal development space, that's what really got me into that, was that book, in terms of, you know, we all find ourselves wrapped up in the future with our minds, or wrapped up in the past with our minds, but it's teaching you so much that you are in flow when you're in the moment and you're in the now. And that was a big like realization for me at the time when I read that book.
Sounds good. Sounds very interesting. It's a massive industry now, the self-help industry.
Yes, it's really huge. It really is.
Yeah.
And at the time, I mean, when I read this book was over 20 years ago. Maybe I was, you know, I was in college, and I found it so inspiring. And it just got me reading one book after the next. And it really helps you adjust your mindset, or allows you to master your mindset. And especially when you're, you know, starting a career and things get tough and you're met with challenges, it really helps you in addressing those challenges and overcoming them.
What about the piece of music or song that you were that you had thought of?
Oh, okay. So that genre for me, it's all about, you know, Latin music.
Amazing.
I'm sure I hinted at that when I was inviting J-Lo and Shakira.
Yeah, yeah.
But I love Latin music. Like, I love all aspects of it. Like, you know, it's fun, it's vibrant, it's energetic, and it's also very calming and soothing.
It's also very high energy, which is amazing.
Yes,
it
is.
Yeah, it has a very positive
feel
to it.
Very positive.
Yeah.
It's always feel good.
Absolutely.
Always will make you happy.
I'm actually really into bossa nova now.
Oh, I love bossa nova.
It's a great kind of music to work to.
Yes.
Because it's very even,
exactly,
tempered.
Exactly. It always puts you in a good mood.
For sure. Shift gears just slightly. I know that you're beginning to do slightly different things now. I know you're not involved in Jazz full time as you had been. I know you're still on the board.
Yes,
of course,
I'm on the board.
But you're taking on a few other things. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So after like 17 years of really giving mind, heart and soul to our organization, like I said, it was like my baby, me and my partner. And we felt like it really needed, you know, new energy. And
so your partner stepped back as well.
Yeah. So
you.
My partner had stepped back before me, and then when I was able to make sure everything is fine, I stepped back as well, and also Corona hit.
Oh yeah.
And so
it all came together.
It all in terms of new things. So before going in deeply into new things, it was the first time since I graduated college that I get to take an actual break. So so I'm enjoying the break.
That's great.
Enjoying the pause.
Good.
And
recharge your batteries.
Recharging and enjoying the time I have, you know, to explore new things. And a big part of my interest, you know, is very diverse. I'm very interested in investing and mentoring women-led businesses. That's an area I'm very interested in and keen on, you know, having more of a role in that aspect. There's an organization that I've been a very big fan of for the past 5 years called Mind Valley.
What are they? What do they do?
So basically, they're an online platform that have the world's experts on various fields. So the world's experts on mindset, mindfulness and meditation, the world's experts on wellness and health and nutrition, high performance, bettering our daily habits, anything that's going to make you a better
performer
at work. And so their platform is very diverse. It's super inspiring. And so these experts have these online courses on that platform. And
so it's an educational tool.
Yeah, so it's a phenomenal resource that's extremely helpful, and especially in times where Corona has shaken us all up. We find ourselves, you know, maybe under a lot of stress or not knowing how to balance, you know, our personal and professional lives. And that is a fantastic resource and tool.
And I think people are exploring as well different things. And
exactly.
So many people I know are doing online courses.
Exactly. You know? So you're learning from the best out there.
And are you going to get involved with them professionally?
No, I'm helping them to expand here in the Middle East. And so that's one project I'm working on now.
And I know that you're also on the board of AUC, the American University in Cairo.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes. I mean,
you've been 3 years now?
Yes. I mean, it's such a phenomenal honor that came out of the blues maybe 3 years ago, and where they asked me to join the board of directors of the American University in Cairo. Really a great honor. Working with so many incredible people on the board who have been there for, you know, decades, really, some of them.
It's an amazing board.
Yes.
It's a real partnership between Egypt and the United States.
It really is. It really is. And a very giving board, and everyone, you know, has such strong, you know, feelings towards helping the university to progress and, you know, to be on top of the charts.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. And how do you talk to your children about what you do? And I know your eldest is 16.
Yeah.
So she must see you. And I mean, I would hope she'd be impressed with you and look up to you and think, you know, this is something, if my mom can do it, I can do anything. You know, that's one of the, I think one of the best things about seeing your mom, especially working.
Yeah.
It's really an inspiration for the children.
Oh, I hope so. We'd have to ask her that because she's now in her teens and all I get are eye rolls.
I know that feeling. But it's good for them to see that anything is possible.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
It's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what we encourage them is, you know, to think out of the box and it's important for them to be passionate, whatever they're passionate about, and to be driven for a cause or a purpose that they want to pursue.
Absolutely. So what's next, Dina?
Who knows, Malek?
The podcast is called What I Did Next. So what is next for you?
Yeah, so after, you know, a 17-year career, a journey that's been like an unstoppable race, right? from goal setting and achieving different things and, you know, growing an organization and an incredible team. Like I told you, it's what's next is...
It was an intense experience.
It's very
you.
Different than what was. And
you've got
and
something
I've had
planned.
I've had to settle with the... and acknowledge that now is the time, you know, to take things easy and to rest and explore new things and explore new options. I've been able to, you know, travel around Egypt this year.
It's been an amazing thing, actually.
With our children and go to retreats. I never had time to go
Absolutely.
To.
But this is like you're setting the groundwork for the next phase.
Yes, yes,
you're kind
exactly.
of relaxing a little bit and seeing.
Yeah, because that's how things, you'll get inspired.
For
that's
sure.
how things will come to
for
you.
Sure.
They won't come to you when I think you're busy with different things.
I agree.
Things.
And the first time around with Injaz, you obviously did something from the heart.
Yes.
Very clearly.
Yes,
You
exactly.
could have taken the harder route or
exactly.
the more corporate avenue
yes.
you chose not
yes.
to.
Yes, and I believe that we should all look at, you know, at following our heart in whatever it is that we do and just lead from there, because... It's like you won't feel like you're working in a sense.
Yeah.
It's like you're enjoying what
Absolutely.
You're doing and you're happy doing what you're doing. And I think that's
Absolutely.
One of the most
and
important
things. And you go with your
things.
Intuition.
Exactly.
For sure.
Yes.
Dina's fun-loving spirit and can-do attitude were visible from the get-go of our conversation when she upended my quiet dinner party and opted instead for a huge dance party, setting the tone for the rest of our time together. She's without doubt a very determined person who doesn't take no for an answer. We saw this at the beginning of her career when she was setting up Injaz at just 23 years old. I was delighted to have Dina on the show and wish her every success in what she does next. Thank you for joining me on What I Did Next from ANT Media. I'm Malak Fouad, and this episode was co-produced by Chirag Desai. If you've enjoyed it, please share the show with your friends and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or IMDb, as it helps more people discover the show. You can also connect with us on Instagram. Just search for What I Did Next. And I really hope to see you in a couple of weeks' time.